Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And happy Tuesday to you, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester. Max Power is producing for us. He's got your KFH hotline, 869-1240. That's ready to go for you. If you have anything you want to talk about, you can also leave us your comments on our video streams via Facebook, YouTube, or X. Also, thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. And as always, if you have us on the Odyssey app, whether in real time or after the fact, you can leave us comments on our app through that little microphone button. It'll leave you a voicemail. We can play those out over the air. Glad to be here with you on a Tuesday. Royals day off in the books. It's behind us. We get back to the action. We'll look at that schedule a little more specifically now and talk about the Royals as they begin a week-long road trip here. We'll get Tommy's thoughts on some of the happenings with the NFL draft as well. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, is stopping by today to also talk about that draft, and we'll hit some of the other headlines. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Tuesday. Good to see you. Missed yesterday, but good to be back today and looking forward to jumping right in.
Yeah, it's you missed a good day. It's a good day to be on the show on a Monday after the draft kind of thoughts. We can certainly dig more in. I want to get your take on what the Chiefs got done in that draft. We have a lot of time this time of year to really analyze that stuff. The NBA playoffs are going on. It's the first round, which I don't think is quite as interesting, although you're getting some officiating stuff with missed calls late and these things, but you know, we'll kind of lock into that a little bit as well later on. But how was your, you had a charity event yesterday for the Hadwins, who we've had on this show. How did that go?
Yeah, it was good. The Hadwin Family Foundation, PGA Tour golfer Adam Hadwin, his wife Jessica have a foundation that I'm thankful to be on the board for the foundation. We had our charity golf tournament, annual golf tournament out at Flint Hills National yesterday. Their foundation's goal is to raise money and awareness for couples, for families that are struggling with infertility. And so it's a really cool cause, really cool event. They do that every single year. And so yesterday was the tournament. It was a lot of fun, great time. And I was the beer cart driver. So drove around with the beer for refills for the golfers on the course.
That's usually there's usually a different profile.
You're right.
For that particular job.
It's a grassroots organization. So, you know, we didn't outsource.
Sorry, did you say grass?
It's a grassroots organization. So, yeah, they didn't outsource anything like that. So it was the members of the board that, you know, jumped in and worked on that. So I drove the beer cart around and it was fun. It was good day.
I think you should be flattered.
I didn't get any tips. Like, I got no tips, unfortunate.
In a lineup of people, and they're like, ooh, we need beer cart driver. You know, based on a typical profile there, if they looked at the lineup and like, you know what, Tommy, I think you'd be a good fit. I think you should be flattered by that.
Well, I mean, I think that they look at me and they recognize, hey, you like beer and you have a valid driver's license. And that was the only qualifications that I think I needed to drive that beer cart.
Yeah. For those that aren't playing along, beer cart drivers are typically more attractive women,
right,
that do that, but Tommy does it well too.
I did. I mean, proud of him. You know, you got to flaunt it. If you got it, flaunt it, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's fun though. I'm glad that they have that event. We've had them on the show. We're so glad that they live here now. All jokes aside, and are a part of the community. And this cause is a big deal, and we get to follow Adam Hadwin on tour and all the things that he's doing. So it's a lot of fun, and that was a cool thing. Hopefully, if you're out there, you got a chance to talk to Tommy. All right, Tommy, let's kind of take an overview here. The draft is in the books. The Shedeur Sanders fallout is continuing, as we get reports yesterday that there were NFL owners after the pre-draft process that basically said, you're not taking him. It's so funny to me, like, what distractions owners are concerned with and what distractions they're not concerned with. Like, the things that Aaron's like, oh, it'll be fine. You know, oh, that violent incident in the past, no big deal. Like, we'll just get through that. But boy, this kid's making TikTok videos and, you know, has come from a place of arrogance. Now he can't deal with that in an NFL locker room. We don't want any of that. It's like, it almost seems fake. It almost seems like it's a manufactured late round pick so that if Shedeur has success, it'll be this great story. It's just wild to me. It's wild to me. No matter what you thought of Shedeur as a pro prospect, you didn't think of him as a fifth round pick. You didn't think of him as what, like the sixth or seventh quarterback off the board. Even his detractors didn't think of him in that light. It's just, it's crazy to me. It's funny.
Well, yeah, I'm a detractor. I mean, I don't think that he is all that good. I've never really thought that he was, a first-round pick or, you know, this future star in the NFL. I never really saw it. I mean, I think he's fine. I think he's a fine quarterback, but I think he's been propped up, you know, by the circus around him. And so I totally understood the hesitation from teams, not because of anything else other than just, I don't think he's all that great. I think he's okay. But I don't think he, you know, grades out, in my opinion, at least, as this future superstar in the league. So I understood the hesitation, but everything else surrounding it, all of the other, you know, for lack of a better term, bullcrap that went on around the draft process with Shedeur, it definitely got in the way of just that evaluation of, do you think he's going to be a good quarterback or not? And really, at the end of the day, I mean, that's the most important question, right? Doesn't matter how arrogant he is, doesn't matter who his dad is, doesn't matter, you know, any of the things that are happening outside of it all. Is he going to be a good quarterback or is he not going to be a good quarterback? Yeah. And so, you know, it's hard for me to look at where he was drafted and be able to say, like, hey, teams really answered that question. And it's really going to ultimately be up to Shedeur to prove it,
well,
you know, on
right.
the field with the Browns. But I was not surprised that he fell out of the first round. I was surprised that he fell all the way to the fifth. That's a little surprising for me, I think, when it was all said and done.
Yeah, with the risk people take at quarterback, it just surprises you that teams that still needed quarterback, and eventually he ended up, I think, in the best spot. I think the Browns were always the best spot for him. He misplayed his hand. I mean, he misplayed his hand. He, whoever was telling him, you know, that he was this prodigious top end pick, that it, you know, and that he would be able to, if some of the reporting is true, not go all in that pre-draft process. That was a misplayed hand is what it was. Now, at the end of the day, it only matters if you can play or not. So it affects him less than a lot of guys because he, you know, he's had a very privileged upbringing with his dad and all the things that they've been able to do. So it's not like, you know, for a lot of people, this would be financially and realistically devastating, right? Like you just went from a whole bunch of money to not very much. I think that's less of a concern for him. So at the end of the day, like no matter what happened, why it happened, how it happened, he ended up, I think, in the best spot and he can get out there and play. And maybe now this is sort of a wake up moment of, yo, dude, like the league doesn't think you're as good as you think you are. So go prove it. Go show them that you are.
Well, and that's what the GM of the Browns said immediately after they drafted him. Like, you know, you're not going to be handed anything. You got to come in and compete. You got to earn that spot. And, you know, that's something that I don't know if he heard a lot from, a lot of people over the course of his life. And this might be the very first time. It's going to be adversity. We'll see if he's able to overcome that or not.
Like, based on the things you hear Prime say and the way he coaches, it's so hard for me to imagine he was given that advice from his dad. Like, it just didn't, I don't know. Anywho, we'll come back. Let's talk about some of the other things that you liked, you didn't like from the draft when we return. We'll get into Royals baseball today at Sports Daily. Don't go away.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. go.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We're glad to be here with you. We're glad to have our Prairie Fire coffee keeping us fueled up and ready to roll each and every morning here at KFH and all across the Odyssey networks. Tommy, let's talk a little bit more about this NFL draft. So, you know, I talked with Brandon yesterday. I think, you know, he was not quite as into the Josh Simmons pick initially as we were, but I think he said yesterday, as he saw the rest of the draft play out, he liked it. I thought it was a really well done job by them. They didn't have to trade up to get the guy that I thought they needed to come away with, or the profile, I should say, of a guy they should have come away with there. And that allowed them to do a lot of things. They then used the rest of their picks to move up several spots in different places and get guys that they liked. As far as like needs and position, they checked all the boxes. That's, you know, they came away with exactly what we thought they should come away with, and they got aggressive in getting some of those guys. I think, you know, they still have to get the players right, but strategically, I thought they did a really, really good job throughout the draft.
I think about the only box that maybe didn't get checked was tight end, and that had been something that had been talked about and speculated for a long time, even potentially that the Chiefs could look at an early draft pick, an early round pick on a tight end, because we all know that Travis Kelce is not long for the league. And so what does that succession plan look like? They've got, you know, Noah Gray, who had a really productive 2024. They've got Jared Wiley, who I know was injured for a lot of last year, but they drafted him in the draft last year, and he's going to be entering into year number two. So they've got players at that position, but I am a little bit surprised that even in a later round, they didn't try to go tight end and at least provide some additional depth there, because you never know. And with Travis Kelce more than likely being done sooner rather than later, you know, having that succession plan, I think, is important.
I mean, George Kittle just got a $40 million guarantee on a 4-year, almost $80 million contract. Chiefs have been so fortunate to have Travis Kelce and his contract and his price and everything else. I think, you know, it will be really interesting. They have, look, Noah Gray is absolutely good enough to be a starting tight end in this league, especially for the Chiefs. So I think they're probably okay there. And I think it's a position that's getting really expensive. You got to be in a pretty good position to take these tight ends. There's not a lot of great ones, but rookies are finally at that position beginning to have a little more impact than they ever have. It's always been a position that takes forever, you know, for players to get up to speed, basically. But now we've seen over the last couple of years, so we'll see. But it's clearly becoming a more premium and a more expensive position. If that continues to happen after, you know, whatever the post Kelce era comes, I'm fine with them rolling with, you know, with Wiley. I mean, with Gray, and we'll see if Wiley can develop into anything. We got nothing out of him last year. I think the other thing I take away, and the Chiefs got their running back late in the draft, and he's a guy we like. I mean, we all have heard him and heard of his name, and I think he fits a profile that will fit in well with Kansas City. One thing I take away from the entire draft, though, I mean, I think all the teams in the AFC West taking running backs like they did, you know, early, all of them, that's interesting. And I think, you know, when you look at the Chiefs, they better be ready to stop the run next year. Because you know, if Sean Payton invested in a back early, they are going to use that back a ton. Obviously, the Raiders will with Ashton Jeanty. They were one of the worst run teams in football last year. They just got a whole lot better. And then the Chargers go and get their guy early in a draft. You know how much Jim Harbaugh wants to run the ball. So you're looking at three teams that want to do that, that all just got really talented at the position. The Chiefs better be ready to stop the run, because I think that's going to be a trend we see. I love that the running back's being valued again. And, you know, all those players may not hit, but I like all three players. Just, you know, personally, I like all three of those players, Hampton and JT and RJ Harvey. But I think their fits are near perfect, like, for those particular teams and coaches.
Well, you know, the Chiefs had really good success a year ago defensively in stopping the run, and they did a really good job at limiting lead backs for their against their opponents. And, so that's going to be something that I know that, you know, the three head coaches that are opposite of the Chiefs in that division are going to really try to lean on. They're going to try to break that trend and, you know, have the Chiefs, you know, stop them on the ground. I think with having a couple of really dynamic running backs, that's going to be a challenge absolutely for, you know, the defensive front for Kansas City. And I think it plays into, you know, sort of this thought process of, okay, at defensive tackle, like we know what they've got pass rushing wise, and we know that they've got Chris Jones up the middle, but they don't have Derek Nnadi, you know, going into this season. So really that's going to, that may end up being an issue. They don't have Turk Wharton. That may end up being an issue. So what does that defensive front look like for Kansas City? And are they going to be able to, you know, a year older on that defensive front, and they added in a veteran in Jerry Tillery, are they going to be able to stop the run as effectively as they were able to do last season?
Probably not. And you look at some of their biggest contenders and competitors in the conference, and they'll run the ball too. Run defense is going to be really critical all across the AFC this year. It just is. Like a lot of these teams, and it's, again, it trends in the NFL this way all the time. And it swings back and forth. Right now, we are in a run because everybody's playing their safeties deep, right? Like if you're going to take away the deep throw, what do? You run the ball. And then until they start selling out to stop the run, and then you start throwing it over the top again. I mean, it's pretty simple. I get it. That it's what makes it interesting for the AFC West to me is you've got three coaches there now that all want to run the ball. All three of them have made a living on big time ground games and that style of football. Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh. Like all of them want to run the ball. And they all just took first or second round running backs. They all just spent a ton of capital at that position. They aren't even trying to hide what they want to do next year. They all want to run the ball. And so, yeah, the Chiefs' biggest reach, I think, kind of universally was the defensive tackle from Tennessee. Like, if you look at all the draft grades and the analysis post, you know, post all that stuff, that seemed like the biggest reach for them. Obviously, they liked that player if they were willing to do that. I don't have a hot take on Lott. Like, I don't, whatever.
Well, and he grades out too, by the way, as more of a pass rusher as opposed to a run stopper. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to know, like, what kind of packages will he play in? Is he somebody that they can rely on when you're playing these divisional opponents twice a season to be able to stop, you know, these new explosive running backs they've got?
I mean, it's, and you look at it now, if you're the Chiefs and you're glad that Chris Jones is back, you're certainly glad that Nick Bolton is back, right? Like those things now look better because that's going to be the test early on. There have been a lot of years where the Chiefs didn't stop the run well. And last year they happened to do it well. They're going to have to do it well again. And there's a lot of different ways they can do that. I think they feel good about leaving their corners by themselves so they can sort of sell out to do it a little bit. I think, though, that if we're looking for early trends, that's one that really jumps out to me, is that fact that the AFC West may lead football collectively, you know, and then there's the Chiefs who don't run the ball much at running the football. Like they all are going to do it.
Well, and that's the really interesting thing when you compare and contrast the other teams in the division and even some of the other teams in the conference in general that loaded up at running back and drafted these studs early on in the draft. And then you contrast that with the Chiefs, and they've got Isaiah Pacheco, they've got Kareem Hunt, they've got Elijah Mitchell, and then they spent a 7th-round pick on Breshard Smith. There's nothing that tells you that the Chiefs are going to lean on the run game at all. I mean, like even any more than what they did a year ago, because even Breshard Smith, you know, they take him in the 7th round, and he might be one of the best receiving running backs, you know, coming out of college, going into the draft. I mean, this guy can, you know, get out wide even and have a lot of success. He started his career as a wide receiver. That's probably going to be a lot of where we see him coming in, probably a 3rd down type guy out of the backfield or even split out wide and catching passes. That's really where he grades out. And so it's just really interesting when you look at Hampton and Jeanty and Harvey, like even in that division, and we know what those coaches want to do. And on the flip side, it's a completely different philosophy with Kansas City. And they've got Pacheco, who we all like Isaiah Pacheco, but he hasn't shown him, you know, being able to be durable because of the way that he runs the ball. Kareem Hunt is old. Elijah Mitchell has never regained what he did his rookie season. And then you've got a seventh round draft pick. So it's like a, it's almost kind of like the island of misfit toys a little bit at running back for the Chiefs when you compare it to at least what their counterparts in the division did.
And they've done that for a long time. The Chiefs have always sort of been ahead of that. And Patrick Mahomes allows you to do that. Here's an interesting number with running backs as it pertains to the Chiefs. Last year, in the Patrick Mahomes era, so the last seven seasons, last year was the most that the Chiefs have run the ball with running backs. But it's by a pretty good margin, the least effective they've ever been running the ball. Okay, so they ran it more. They had more running back attempts last year than they have in any year since 2018. But their yards per carry was significantly lower, by almost half a yard on the lowest seasons than it has been.
Well, and don't you think defenses recognized, like as the season was progressing, that it wasn't like they had, outside of Travis Kelce, really any threats? I mean, because Xavier Worthy was still kind of coming into his own. DeAndre Hopkins didn't come in until later in the season.
I think it was an offensive line thing. I think the Chiefs didn't have a choice for the reasons we talked about, and maybe we didn't give them enough credit for going outside their norm. They couldn't pass block, so they had to run the ball. And teams over time, like they're going to know, like they have to run the ball because they can't block us on the edge. We don't even have to blitz. Like, we don't have to try very hard to put pressure on the quarterback. Let's sell out to stop the run. Now, they still had their own. I don't want to call it an effective offense, but Tommy, they went 15-1. So like they made it work. So I think what I see for this team, and this goes back to the Simmons pick and some of the things they've done in the offseason and bringing back Trey Smith, as long as, you know, they can fill the gap left by Joe Tooney, their offensive line is going to be a better pass blocking. There is almost no scenario where they're not a better pass blocking offensive line than they were a year ago. And that's going to change the defense's ability to do what it did against them a year ago, whether that means more shots over the top, whether it means they can, you know, run a little more of the offense they typically would like to run. Fewer carries, but more effective and more well-timed runs. Maybe that's the case. We don't know yet, but we do know they'll be better at that position. I do think what we saw last year was really interesting, though, because we sat here until we were blue in the face and said, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. I mean, Andy Reid, for an Andy Reid team, they kind of did, right? They didn't do it very well, but they didn't have a choice. They had to.
You know, remember they had Pacheco out, you know, for a period of time with that broken leg.
A lot of that is a Kareem Hunt.
They were leading
thing.
On Kareem Hunt. I mean, that was really the only option that they had at that point. And, you know, because remember for a while it was Kareem Hunt and Carson Steele. Like those were the guys in the running back, in the backfield for the Chiefs.
Kareem Hunt can pass block and he can fall forward.
Yeah.
Like he looks very much like late career Zeke Elliott right now. Like he's always going to fall forward. He's always going to get you 2.5-3 yards. And he can pass block. And that's why he was there last year. But he wasn't effective. So, yeah, they didn't. You know, they went. And I do like the back they took in the seventh. I don't think Elijah Mitchell's going to be a factor. I think
that they've telegraphed, to your point, they've telegraphed what they plan on doing this season. Because, you know, they didn't go in free agency and get a running back other than Elijah Mitchell, which is probably a non-factor. You know what Kareem Hunt is going to do. You know what Isaiah Pacheco is going to do. And the running back that they picked is, again, one of the best receiving running backs coming out of college. They're going to use him out of the backfield to catch the football. That's why they drafted him. And so they didn't go and get an early down running back. Like that's not what they did in the draft. And outside of Isaiah Pacheco, when healthy, they don't have an early down running back. I mean, I guess Kareem Hunt to an extent, but Elijah Mitchell's not going to be that guy. And even Breshard Smith is not going to be a 20-plus carry guy. He's not even going to be a 10-plus carry guy. Like, this is a true running back by committee that the Chiefs are going to implement going into this season. And I think you could tell by the way that they utilize their draft capital how they want to get back to that pass first offense. That's really the way that's where they've, you know, made their living. That's their bread and butter. They want to get back to that.
And why wouldn't they? Right? Like, why wouldn't they when you're going to run out Rice and Worthy and Hollywood Brown and Travis Kelce at the top?
And I like the Royals pick, by the way.
He probably
can compete for like a, you know, the fourth running back or for a fourth wide receiver spot. Like, I like that pick for Kansas City too. They didn't go too high, I don't think, in grabbing a wide receiver. I thought that was about the right area of the draft for them to take him.
Yeah. And he'll come in, whereas like Sky Moore came in with way too much pressure, right? Like way too much. He needs to do this because they're kind of similar skill sets. This dude can come in and have absolutely no expectation.
That's why I wasn't going to be a big fan. Like, I know that there were mocks that had Luther Burden going to the Chiefs in the first round or second round. I'm like, no, like, let's not do that again, because you're going to put a lot of pressure on. And, you know, the good thing with Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy in the past couple of years is that, yeah, those guys had pressure on their shoulders because they were taken early. They lived up to it. And not at first. I mean, both times, both years, the Chiefs pushed them into duty. Rashee Rice 2 years ago, Xavier Worthy a season ago, pushed them into duty early. And it for a while, it didn't really look like it was going to pan out. And they came along. They developed into really good wide receivers, both of them. I didn't want to do that again for a third season in a row.
Well, right. And they're not going to have to do anything with Royals, because they don't need him to be anything more than a fifth wide receiver for a little while. And his skill set, Brandon, laid out very well yesterday what he does. Sounds a lot like Rashee Rice. So if Rice gets suspended, you've got your backup plan there. But you didn't, you know, and they moved around to get him, right? He's a fourth round pick. They clearly like him. He's a guy that a lot of people felt like fell in the draft. So yeah, I think I'm glad to see them address it, but not more aggressively than they needed to. They were aggressive with their drafting of a defensive tackle everybody thought should be a little bit lower. Ashton Gelati, by the way, I don't know if you saw it. There was a story about him a long time ago at Louisville, and it's worth checking out. Like, this dude seems like you want to root for him. We'll just put it that way. Like, well documented that he gives most of his NIL earnings back to like local food shelters and all kinds of stuff. And he's putting in the time. So seems like they got a really good dude there. One reason to root for it. And then the other positions, like all of them just sort of make sense. The Chiefs had a very logical draft, I think, with the top end and Simmons of being, I mean, it could be one of those things, right? It's this injury, and I get injuries, and there's a lot of teams that are like, you know, they avoid risk at every, you know, possible scenario. The Chiefs have proven to us in drafts. They just can take risks that others can't because they have the safety net of Mahomes. If Simmons works out and is healthy and is as talented as literally everybody that follows this says he is, there's nobody that follows this stuff that doesn't think he's a premier top 10 talent, if not for injury, man, the Chiefs, it could be transformational for their franchise because they can finally be done with this question that's loomed over them for so long. The Chiefs, we go in depth on what they do. We like it. I think most people like it. Haven't seen anybody that didn't, you know, like what they're doing. Here's the interesting thing about the draft. Maybe it's the most interesting thing about the draft this year. We had a quarterback taken number one overall. We have now covered the draft for three shows here, for post-draft, since the first round is in the books. And I don't know that we've spent 30 seconds on Cam Ward. I really, like, how strange is that? You got a guy, like, and his story is incredible. You know, from where he came from and like what he was recruited as and all that stuff. Like, his story's awesome. He had a great year. Nobody on the planet is talking about it. And it's just a really interesting, I don't think we've ever had a number one quarterback, like a quarterback go number one overall and just not be talked about at all.
I don't think that's a bad thing for Cam Ward. I don't think it's a bad thing for Ward. I don't think it's a bad thing for the Titans. I think that they probably prefer that. I mean, I would imagine that Cam Ward and his crew, going into the draft. I mean, they knew that the circus was going to be around Shedeur Sanders. And, you know, so if they can go number one overall, make that money, go to the Titans, who are absolutely quarterback needy, and fly under the radar, man, that's the best case scenario. We talked about it, I think it was on Friday's show, about how there maybe has not been a less hyped number one overall pick in a long time. I mean, and really, like, especially at quarterback. You know, you can go back to the guy from Georgia a couple of years ago that went number one overall that didn't get a ton of hype, I don't feel like, because he wasn't a quarterback. But yeah, Cam Ward's a QB, and he hasn't gotten a ton of attention. And I think that that's really telling based on all the other draft storylines and everything else going on, that really there had been very little attention paid to the actual guy that went number one.
And like you said, it's a good thing. There's a video, I think, through the pre-draft process somewhere where Shadur's trying to get Cam to do a fun video. He's like, "Nah, man, I just play football." Which is fine, which is very unusual, right, for that generation of player. But I think, you know, the path for him to get there, it probably is as much as anybody else. It's just like all business. Like, nope, like I just am going to do this. And you like to see that thing, because that thing is a pretty universal trait among the great ones. Now, it's not exclusive. Like, Patrick Mahomes loves to have fun. You know, like he's a little older than this generation of, is it TikTok, I assume, is what they're all doing these videos on and stuff. But that, you know, like that, you want to see that killer instinct, and you never know if it's going to be there at a high level in the NFL. But among the great ones, it's pretty universally a trait that they have. And so to see it is good. Now, can he play the position? We'll find out. I mean, the Titans, they were in a position to take the top quarterback, and they took the guy that most feel was the top quarterback, and I'm good with it. Like, I don't have any issue with Cam Ward. I just don't know his game very well, because I didn't watch a lot of him. You know, he didn't play on a team that was in like high profile bowl games, and didn't play in the Big 12. And he kind of was late. He was a late arrival a little bit to college football. Whereas, like, you know, Dylan Gabriel's been around forever. We've all seen Dylan Gabriel play. He's been playing for a decade. So it's different with Ward. I hope he's awesome. Like, I think he has a real chance to be very good. I just, you know, it's like with Shedeur, right? I feel like I can evaluate his game, right? Like, I like his, because we watch Big 12 football. We watched a ton of Shedeur Sanders the last 2 years. It's not quite the same for me with Ward, but, you know, I root for it. He seems like he's going to be a fun player if it works out to have in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cam Ward didn't really play for programs that, you know, are must-see TV. I mean, he played for Washington State and was a really good quarterback for Washington State. Then ultimately went to Miami. Miami's more high profile for sure, but Miami's not an SEC team. They're not a Big Ten team. You know, they're in the ACC, so they're not getting, you know, huge visibility nationally like those other two conferences are. And so, you know, yeah, like he flew under the radar a little bit in college, but I mean, he still even had, you know, really good accolades. I mean, the fact that he was an All-American, you know, first team All-American, and, you know, all these other, you know, all these other things, ACC Player of the Year last year. Like, he's won a bunch of awards, and he's been extremely successful over the course of his career. But I do think that that's part of the reason why he didn't get all of the attention, was because he wasn't in the SEC. He wasn't in the Big Ten, you know? And right. So knowing that, like, yeah, that's going to at least hamper a little bit of the attention you're going to get.
Yeah. And should, you know, had Shedeur not had his famous last name, he'd have been in the same boat, right? Started at Jackson State for a couple of years and then ends up at Colorado, which isn't a great program. We just happened to watch a lot of Colorado because we watched the Big 12. That's why I felt good about his game or whatever.
Well, and the attention from the country in general is on Colorado because of who the coach is.
Right, right, I mean,
you've got
right.
celebrities
I mean.
The on the sideline and
there.
All of that. So even if it wasn't the Big 12, people would have paid attention to it for sure.
But they have similar paths, right? Jackson State to a big time league. If you go back further than Washington State with Cam Ward, he started at Incarnate Word.
Right.
So it is pretty, like, their paths are pretty similar. And their success is pretty similar, honestly. Like, neither of them played for programs that were, although Colorado got real close last year to being in a playoff or anything like that. But to spend a couple of years at a smaller school and then to eventually get into the bigger league and find success, the paths are similar for Shadur and Cam Ward on the field, right? On the field paths are pretty similar. So that's an interesting part. I can guarantee you Ward will become one of my favorite players. What Cam Ward represents to me is what the good part of, you know, the transfer portal and NIL, the changing rules. Cam Ward is like should be the poster boy of what's right about it. As a guy who went to D2 schools that for four generations of quarterback sent quarterbacks to the NFL. Now wrap your head around that. I went to a Division II school, four straight, I believe it was four straight quarterbacks at West Texas A&M all played in the NFL. That's pretty wild. Right. But they all had to get there as seventh round picks or whatever, as undrafted free agents or whatever it was. It went Dalton Bell to Keith Knoll. And then a couple of guys, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but all of them played in the NFL. So now to see Cam Ward start his career at a place like Incarnate Word, same level, right? Division II, but then have the opportunity to slide up and move around and eventually get to the ACC. And I bring that up because I guarantee you all four of those quarterbacks would have been good quarterbacks in the ACC. They were tremendously talented. And so now this path exists for these guys who are outplaying their, you know, they're outplaying their level a little bit. Like Cam Ward in the old days would have spent four damn years at Incarnate Word and maybe gets a sniff and a chance to be a practice squad guy. Like the path for them to get there is so difficult that it's just like, okay, now in the current era, this guy who's very good, who was under-recruited out of high school, he ends up at Miami, has a chance to make some money at Miami, and then now he has a path to be the first number one overall pick.
And by the way, Incarnate Word was the only scholarship offer this guy got. He did not get not even Division II, NAIA, like nobody else offered him a scholarship. That was the only one he got.
It's very common, right, in that level for that to be the case. That's not unusual. You know, it's just like that is very common because for whatever reason, they were under-recruited, right? There's a million reasons why that happens. Million. But it happens all the time. Like all the time it happens. So you just like you can't overthink sometimes a talented player. And that's what happens to a lot of these guys at lower levels. So that was the other thing I wanted to mention, because again, like it wasn't like Washington State it was Incarnate Word to Washington State to Miami. That by most accounts, most people's favorite two quarterbacks in this draft. Okay, let's take Shadur Sanders' name out of the equation. And maybe he would have been a Division I talent if he didn't choose to go play for his dad at Jackson State. I can't remember. I don't think he was. But like the two guys that most people had as the best quarterbacks in this class, neither of them, Tommy, started in Division I football. Neither one of them did. So as we all want to get angry sometimes with the portal, let's remember that fact too. Like here's two dudes and one of them went number one overall that didn't even start in Division I football. So as we get a little further down the road, I think all of this stuff's going to be a good thing. That would have never happened. It couldn't have happened. Like it wouldn't even be possible. Cam Ward before the being allowed the freedom to transfer, like he would have never been able to be the first overall pick. Not because of his ability. His ability hasn't changed, but because the opportunity wouldn't have been there. Now it is. That's a good thing. As much as we all get annoyed with the transfer portal, there's a reason it's the right thing to do. If you look for those reasons, that right there is a reason it is the right thing, because it's allowed a kid whose ability allows him to be the number one overall pick to have the opportunity to do it that he would have never had before.
Well, think about the other quarterbacks, too, that, you know, surrounding Cam Ward and even Shadur Sanders to that extent. You know, you've got Jackson Dart, that he was a USC guy in Ole Miss, you know, played in played in, you know, for big time premier programs. Jalen Milroe played for Alabama. Dylan Gabriel, we know about him and all the different places that he played, including Oklahoma and, you know, Oregon and like premier programs around the country. And so, like, you've always got the blue blood guys. You've always got the blue chip guys. Like, they're the ones that are getting a lot of attention, and rightfully so, because they're on big time stages and they're out in front of it all the time. But then quietly under the radar, here comes Cam Ward, you know, and he becomes the number one overall pick and goes to a team that I go back to what I said before. I think that the Titans probably prefer for Cam Ward to fly under the radar, you know, and if they're going to use the first round pick or the number one overall pick on Cam Ward, being able to bring him on, because I mean, remember the circus that surrounded Caleb Williams when he went number one overall a year ago, and to an extent it's still there. Like, the hopes and dreams of the Bears organization rest firmly on the shoulders of Caleb Williams. It's probably the same for Cam Ward internally, but not externally, because nobody's really paying attention to that. And I think that that's an advantage for Cam Ward and what the Titans want to accomplish.
And it's a good place to be able to do it. It feels like a really good fit, right? An organization that in general flies under the radar, that's almost, except for last year, obviously they had the number one overall pick, almost always better than they're expected to be. It does feel like a good fit. And this is the first time, at least for me, that I've spent any real time talking about the number one overall pick in the draft. And he was a quarterback. He wasn't a defensive lineman. Isn't that crazy? We'll come back. We'll talk a little baseball in the next hour. Felix Johnson joins us as well, though, to get a draft take. We'll be back on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is another hour of Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you. Let's start the hour off with some HTO for you for free. All you got to do is text the keyword T to 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors, including the return of Blueberry Summerade. It'll be good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. Again, that's T to 20357. Good luck, everybody. We begin this hour of Sports Day. A little Royals talk here, Tommy. I don't want to say it was all the schedule and what ails them, but the schedule certainly helped get them back on track. Now they begin a six-game road trip with the first game coming in Tampa tonight in a place that has become a hitter's park. You'd like to see the Royals open things up. Tampa can pitch, but you know they're playing in this park now that – listen, I know they went 5-1. They scored a combined four runs. Was it seven runs in the three games against the Astros. Two of the wins were 2-0. They're not back on offense by any means. They're not there yet. They beat up on the Rockies a little bit and scored some runs. Good for them. That's what they're supposed to do. But they only scored seven runs in three games against the Astros. So the overlying issue of the offensive production still is not come around. Playing lesser opponents has helped them win some of those games, but they're still not hitting the ball the way they need to be hitting the ball.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, because I haven't really been following where the Rays are playing. I'm curious to know what makes it a hitter's park. Is it just the dimensions of the field?
I don't know what it is, but it's like you look across baseball and you see, you know, the Rays about average or above average in runs scored in the American League. And you're like, well, what is that all about? And that's just something I'd heard early in the year that was going to play more of a hitter's role than maybe.
I mean, if it does, that's, I guess, good for the Royals going into this series.
Right.
But, you know, like, look, I think that, yeah, a little bit of it was schedule. The fact that they were able to get runs across the board against the Rockies in that midweek series last week. But they still, you know, were able to get 2-3 from Houston. The pitching was really good outside of the finale on Sunday for Kansas City. I think, you know, you've got to feel at least marginally better about the overall prospects of the Royals after the Houston series. I think, you know, things kind of came back down to earth a little bit after sweeping the Rockies, but still being able to take 2 of 3 from Houston. And in the way that they were able to do it, ultimately in the first two games by shutting out Houston, the bullpen looked good in those games as well. I think that going on the road, I certainly feel better about the Royals now than I did at the start of their last road trip.
It's interesting, if you look across baseball right now, in all of baseball, Tommy, there's only one team that has scored fewer runs this year than the Royals, and it's my Rangers. If you think you're frustrated about offense, Royals fans, try being a Rangers fan. Like, it is, because the Rangers are supposed to be built on offense. Like, they're loaded. Their lineup is loaded, and they cannot score any runs. And they're having the same. I was watching the game against the A's last night. Same conversations. Like, it feels like this is just a collective slump, and at some point it's going to be burst out of. I would tell you that on paper you'd think the Rangers lineup would have a better chance. The Royals need some help here. But, both of these teams are very much in the mix. They're both the Royals are game under 500, the Rangers game over 500. So they've withstood it okay, and I think that's encouraging, honestly. I do, because the other bad teams are the other teams that haven't scored a lot of runs, kind of like the Rockies and the White Sox. The Blue Jays, oddly, haven't scored a ton of runs. So I think it's a symptom of a lot of things. I think it's okay. Like, I'm not overly concerned with it. I like the way the Royals have been preventing runs for the most part this year. We have to start asking the questions about whether or not this is fixable internally, right? Like, is this going to take external help to get significantly better? And I think the answer to that question is very likely yes, I do. I think they're going to have to find another bat, significant bat, before the end of this season if they want to get where they're trying to go. And maybe it's more than one, but whether that's Caglione or whether it's somebody via trade, they're going to need to bring in some help.
I get it, and I don't think you're wrong. I really am interested to see how Drew Waters continues his play because, if he can get it going and solidify, and I think he should be, and he pretty much already is at this point, should be an everyday player for the Royals. Yeah. You know, they're putting the expectation to be that guy, to be, a core contributor on this team, and potentially a starter every single day on his shoulders. And that's been what we've been waiting on from Drew Waters for a while. Is he going to be an all-star? I don't think he projects out, quite there, but you need at least somebody that you feel like you can put out in the outfield that can produce. And at least so far in this run, Drew Waters has been able to do that. It's a very low bar, honestly, because of how bad the outfield has been for Kansas City, going back to even last season. So it's not like you have to be this like premier outfielder. You just have to do better than what the outfielders have done last season and so far this year, for Kansas City. And so if Waters can do that, then yeah, I don't think that negates your argument of that they need to go out and get an impactful bat potentially. But I do think that at least you can see improvement in the outfield because of Drew Waters coming up and playing every day.
And Drew Waters, I hope, and again, high pedigree, but he doesn't do the thing that they need so desperately. And his development's awesome. Like, it's going to be it could be a major factor this year. But they are not hitting any home runs at all. You look at the leaders of this team in OPS, and Drew Waters is one of them. Mark Canha probably doesn't have enough ABs or anything to really get a good look. But if you look at Bobby Witt Jr., Drew Waters, and Michael Garcia, for instance, and Garcia is like barely at league average, but you look at those guys right there. How many home runs do you think those three guys have collectively?
Four?
Five.
Five, yeah.
Okay. How many home runs collectively do you think Salvi, Vinny, and Bobby have at this point?
Seven.
Yes. So there's your issue right there. It's not like, and that's what I'm like, Drew Waters getting on base that's great. I love it. Love to see it. That's not what this team is starved for. This team is starved for people in the middle of the lineup to drive runs in, not score those runs. They need somebody Vinny Salvi, we're looking at you more than anybody else to drive those runs in. They don't have a middle of the lineup right now. That's the problem. Like, they don't have anybody that even profiles.
Well, and so don't
they've
you
been
think,
running. They've been trying to make Michael Massey their six hole.
Right. Don't you think that they really? I know that there were negotiations and there were conversations about trying to bring a middle of the lineup bat in during the offseason. I know that they were linked to Santander, who obviously went back to Toronto and all of that. Like, there were those conversations during the offseason, but really, outside of the bullpen and pitching, the priority was getting table setters in that lineup. Yep. They went out and got Jonathan India. You know, they've got like those guys to be able to get on base. That hasn't really been a major issue this season. Mm-hmm. You've got the players that have gotten on base. There just hasn't really been anybody to be able to bring those guys in. That's been the major factor.
And the two guys that are in the position, and in the lineup in a position to do it, just have been off to a slow start, Salvi and Vinny. Salvi's starting to pick it up. So here's, like, for me, it's like, at what point do you just let Drew Waters hit in the five hole? Like, if he's going to get on with singles, great. Like, there's a decent chance somebody will be on for him. Maybe that single will score us a run. Like, just go nuclear with the lineup outside of Bobby Witt Jr. in the two hole. Like, totally mix it up and just see if you can scratch and claw some runs together.
And Matt
Cutrero has shown, figure it out.
Cutrero has shown that he's willing to tinker with that. I mean, moving Vinny Pasquantino to the seven hole for a game.
But
and
I think
all
he only
that.
Did that for like one game, right? Like, that was it. He did it that one time. And at some point, and it's not like, that's the thing. Like, again, it's kind of like the back end of the bullpen, right? When I was wanting to pull my hair out because I wouldn't use Ursic anywhere, let alone like in high leverage spots. Like, at some point, it's not, we'd all like for the lineup to go India, Witt, Vinny, Salvi, and what, like, we'd all like that to happen. But if it's like at the moment, it needs tinkering and it's not working, mix it up. If Drew Waters is on fire right now, move him up in the lineup for a minute. If Canna's going to be a flash in the pan this year, let him hit cleanup. Who cares? Like, at this point, just anything you can do. I don't know that the home runs are coming. I mean, I don't think that they are outside of Vinny and Salvi and Bobby Witt Jr. Those are going to be the only three guys that hit a lot of home runs. Maybe Mikel Garcia gives you a little pop. It's not going to come via the long ball, at least not right now. So what can you do to get these runs across the plate? Because you're not getting any easy ones through home runs. You're just not. Like, it's not going to be what this team does. And we knew that coming into the year. That's one of the reasons I think we're seeing Cags get fast-tracked, honestly. Like, the thing he does well is what they need so desperately right now. And you got to be careful with it. And it's too early, right? They just had a great homestand. They won a bunch of games. This is a team that absolutely can win low-scoring games. They've got good starting pitching. They have a great back end of the bullpen. But it's something we got to monitor because it's like the problems, I don't think, are just that they're slumping. We'll talk more about this in a little bit when we return. More on the NFL draft. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, hops on to Sports Daily. Don't go away.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Joining us now, Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, looking at the NFL draft. A lot to get to. We talked to Felix last Friday. After the first round and not the other collection of rounds. I know you were not in love with Josh Simmons. Maybe not enough pizzazz for you there, Felix. But I would ask you now that you've seen the rest of the draft play out, are you more on board with it, or would you still like to see a different direction on the top?
I think we just kind of saw a Brett Veach draft, heavy on defense and necessary on offense, where they go out and get Josh Simmons. Obviously, we talked about that on Friday, where they, whether or not they, it's going to work. I hope it does, because it's left tackle. And if he's the talent that he's supposed to be getting him at 32 and then getting another pick based off the trade, awesome. Great. I hope that works out. But the Chiefs have had multiple tackles who haven't worked out. So maybe there's something with the development of the position, but nobody's up to Josh Simmons's pedigree, at least. And so with the rest of the draft, they went heavy. They got a couple corners. They got a late round running back. We've seen that before. 2022, almost exactly what it was back then, with the exception of Simmons and Karlaftis and all that good stuff. But we talked about how if the Chiefs were going to draft an edge rusher, where that may point them in the direction of what they're going to do with George Karlaftis next season. Well, their next pick was an interior defensive lineman. Then the pick after that was an edge rusher. So that pointed them in a direction of, like, we understand where George Karlaftis is good. Let's get another good year out of him. Maybe franchise tag him if he has the case for it next year, and then figure out whatever the case may be with the rookie guys that you have, like Astro Gillette and different guys like that. So I am interested, because I am a Chiefs fan, and Brett Veach obviously has a proven track record. But I would have liked to have seen something different, and this is just what we've seen from the Chiefs in the last handful of years.
Felix, we had this conversation in our last hour about what the other teams in the division did early on as far as impactful potential running backs on their roster. They all did it, whether we're talking about Ashton Jeanty with the Raiders, Amarian Hampton with the Broncos, RJ Harvey with the Chargers. You know, clearly, like, you know, these other teams in the division and with the coaches that they have, They're going to want to run the football on Kansas City. The Chiefs were really good at stopping the run last season, especially against lead backs. But you talked about interior defensive line and really the what the Chiefs want to do at that position. We know they don't have Derek Nnadi. We know they don't have Turk Wharton. They signed Jerry Tillery. They drafted a guy early on the interior defensive line. How do you think Kansas City came out in that regard, especially knowing that, you know, it does look like these other teams in the division are going to want to run the ball on them?
Well, we'll focus on defense here, but I do want to talk about, like, if the Chiefs offensively, like, they want to run the football, they should want to run the football too. But if everybody else in the division is doing it, maybe you should want to do a little bit of it too. But defensively, it is going to be interesting to see where their new pieces fit in. Jalot and Norman Lott, they have different guys coming in, and whether or not they're going to be immediate impact players. Obviously, with guys like Chris Jones, your defensive line is made obviously a little bit better, at least on its face. But losing guys like Turk Wharton, Derek Nnadi, and going back even a little bit, Colin Saunders, who weren't exactly like these big, great names of like, oh, this is like, this name is coming to my head, but Damon Snacks Harrison, who's like, this is a run stopper. These guys actually came in and had some type of value to this team without being these big names that you see every week. And so I am interested to see where the Chiefs are. They drafted a linebacker in Jeffrey Bassa later on, and so they have another guy to add into that rotation, because I expect Leo Chenal to have a bigger role this year in the run-stopping capability. So I am interested, to say the very least, just because the Chiefs' defensive line, I've always thought, has the ability to be one of the best in the league. It's just that they haven't reached that potential yet, and they've just added more to it.
So you said, and I've said this, and we said this all a ton last year, that they need to run the ball more. We looked this up. With running backs, they ran the ball more than they have ever in the Patrick Mahomes era last year. They had more running back carries than any year since 2018. At the same time, they did it far less effectively than they ever have. I think it's a product of Kareem Hunt. I do. Like, I think, you know, Kareem Hunt helped them a lot last year, but they just had no juice in the run game. I don't know how much I think they need to run it next year. If you could tell me, and it's almost possible for me to imagine that they won't be a better pass blocking team next year. But if you can tell me they'll be a better pass blocking team next year, I would say I'm more open to them slinging it around based on the players they have on offense. If they have Rice and Worthy and Brown and Kelsey and now Royals and Juju Smith-Schuster, like, I'm good with slinging it around next year if they can block it up, which is something they couldn't do last year, which is why they did run it more last year. They just didn't do a very good job of it.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily hate it if I could trust all of those guys that you just listed. Like, Juju, sure, whatever, he's Juju Smith-Schuster. Rashee Rice, I loved what he did for the first four games of this season, but that's all we saw from him this year. So hopefully he can become that guy. Xavier Worthy, I think that we've seen basically everything we're going to see from Xavier Worthy to me. Like, he's going to be a few more completions downfield or whatever the case may be, but he is basically what he's going to be: a fast guy, a second receiver, maybe even third receiver, whatever the case may be. None of those guys really, really gave me the oomph for like what the Chiefs are trying to do next year. Now, I understand, obviously, go get Josh Simmons, but if you can't make the moves in free agency, you kind of have to make them in the draft, and they didn't, and fine, whatever. They're going to make the moves. Like, we've talked about it all the time. They can make none of the moves that we've talked about and still be in the AFC Championship game, and we won't be shocked. So they're going to be at least in the conversation as contenders as the Kansas City Chiefs, but I'm just not sure where that extra oomph is coming from, because the defense is as good as it's going to get. The offense isn't going to change exactly. You got to throw in something new, and they didn't really throw in anything new. I think we're going to see something with Rashee Rice's suspension coming down soon, and that's half the season maybe. And so do you really want to be down at your number one receiver effectively? He may not be the number one in the league as a whole, but do you want to lose him for half the season and have no other recourse other than, yeah, Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy? And Hollywood Brown wasn't there to start the season last year.
How do you feel overall about their seventh round pick, the running back out of SMU, Breshard Smith? I mean, he's a guy that coming out of college was one of the best receiving running backs out of college. And to me, it seems like a guy that while he's got that talent to catch the football, either out of the backfield or split out wide, really, I mean, they don't have like a workhorse early down running back. I know Pacheco, the way that they lean on him, more than likely, he's going to get injured at some point during the season. And then, you know, you're hoping that Kareem Hunt has some juice left in the tank, and you're hoping that Elijah Mitchell can recapture some of his excitement from his rookie season a few years ago. But other than that, they don't really have a workhorse. How did you feel about the way that they deployed it, at least running back, in the draft?
Right. And we've talked about it. Andy Reid's not going to have a workhorse unless it is Kareem Hunt in his prime or Jamal Charles or Brian Westbrook or LeSean McCoy. Like, it has to be one of these guys that are the best in the league. So that's just not going to happen. So I think that it's just another guy added to the fleet, and Breshard Smith, a receiving back. And obviously we want to throw it around, and you see how creative Andy Reid and Matt Nagy probably, and Patrick Mahomes and all those, Joe Blaymeyer, their passing game coordinator, how interesting they can be in the screen game. So get another running back. I mean, one of the biggest plays of the year was the fourth down call to Samaje Perine, and it was a pass to a running back. So this is obviously an offense that wants to get the running back more involved offensively, whether that is running the ball like we have talked about, or through the passing game like we're talking about here with Breshard Smith. I think that is just another piece of, oh, maybe they're going to throw something in. And him being drafted in the seventh round shouldn't be as discouraging, because who wears number 10 for the Kansas City Chiefs? A seventh round pick. So I think it's going to be an interesting spot if he makes the roster. Again, he is a seventh round pick.
Yeah, that one's interesting. Wide receiver's interesting. Royals is a guy that profiles a lot like Rashee Rice, mm-hmm. a yak guy, right? Quick trip. So I don't know. I kind of feel like that was a backup plan a little bit. Like, you know, maybe if Rice gets suspended, that's where they took that guy, and that's why they took that guy. And he had kind of like Simmons, right? Some higher grades. Don't know why he fell. We know why Simmons fell. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's a pretty appropriate level of risk for that position. I was not on board with the go ballistic over, and I almost always am. Hand up, Tommy can attest to this. I'm always like, they need more receiver. They need more receiver. I don't feel that way this year. And I thought that pick was a nice little slide it in slowly if Rice gets suspended in the middle of the year, and let him try to fill that role.
Yeah. No, again, the Royals, whatever, this is going to be the best season of his career no matter what. Like, he's going to be the best version that Jalen Royals could be in his rookie season, strictly because Andy Reid's the head coach and Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. Even if the offense kind of looks like it has in the last couple years, Jalen Royals is going to have, just because of what you're saying, because we've seen Rashee Rice in this offense, and so they have kind of troubleshot a player like him, if you will. They know what plays work for Rashee Rice. So let's just say, hey, let's just take Rashee Rice's plays, copy and paste them to Jalen Royals if it works out that way. And obviously they're going to have a long offseason to figure all that stuff out. And we've seen over the last few years, it took Xavier Worthy the entire season to figure it out. It took Rashee Rice the entire season to figure out. It took Sky Moore never to figure it out. So, like, it's going to take a long time for certain guys to figure it out. It may take Jalen Royals until the playoffs to even be getting legitimate play time and multiple or legit snaps during games. And do you want that to be the case by that point in the playoffs? Do you want a fourth-round rookie making big plays for you? Maybe. Depends on the situation, because you have Mahomes and Reed to trust and Kelsey to trust. So I am interested to see how that works out. Would have liked to see the Chiefs make some more offensive moves. They obviously did get a little bit more risky, like you're talking about, Jacob, with trading and moving around a little bit and trying to get more picks and more players because they're looking towards the future. But this was a kind of a Brett Veach draft. Go get a couple defensive backs. Go get a receiver that fits what you already do. Go draft an offensive lineman because, frankly, you need one. So I'm not shocked with anything that they did. And Royals is one of those things that, like, oh, it'll be interesting to see what they do because it's probably going to work.
There was a lot of speculation going into the draft that at least, you know, one of the picks, and maybe even later in the draft, the Chiefs would have went tight end. And, you know, considering that, you know, Travis Kelce probably isn't super long for the NFL long term. And they do have Noah Gray. They do have Jared Wiley entering year number two into the league. Were you surprised at all that they didn't go tight end at all?
You know, I think it's kind of interesting. We were having a conversation last week with our in Field Vision, and we were talking about, like, should the Chiefs draft a tight end? Because it's like, Travis Kelce, sure, he's old, fat, and slow, but he was one of the top four most effective tight ends in the league last year, production-wise. And so if Loveland or Warren would have dropped past 20, do I see the Chiefs making some type of move? Maybe. But also, Noah Gray has been very good. Like, he's been a very good tight end. And I'm not saying that he's going to be Travis Kelce Jr., but he's going to be a good tight end whenever Travis Kelce decides to retire. As the starter for the Chiefs. So I am interested in to see in what the future for Noah Gray is. And had Loveland or Warren dropped any further past 10 or 14, which they weren't going to, There might have been a move made, but even then it would have been like, wait, what are the Chiefs doing? So
I mean, look, nobody's going to be Travis Kelce. I think people need to stop with that. Like, who replaces Travis Kelce? The answer to that question is nobody replaces Travis Kelce. The offense will look different.
Travis Kelce can't replace Travis Kelce right now.
Right. The fact that they went Tony Gonzalez seemingly to Travis Kelce is absurd.
Don't forget about Leonard Pope.
It's not like you will not replace Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Not what he means to Mahomes, not what he's meant to this offense. Like, it's impossible. So they're not going to draft his replacement. Noah Gray's going to be fine. Like, we've seen it. They've got to change the offense a little bit, which I think is what we've seen in the last few drafts and the kinds of players they're taking. That's the replacement to Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. How does the pass design look different in a couple of years?
Right. That you're exactly right. They have to figure out, and that's why maybe I'm a little bit early on it where I wanted them to get a receiver this year. Maybe it's next year, like you're saying, after Travis Kelce retires. Like, all right, let's fully change this offense. Let's get a number one receiver, whether it be via trade, free agency, or trading up in the draft, or whatever the case may be. Or if Rashee Rice or Xavier Worthy has developed into that number one guy, then so be it. Or hell, we're talking about him. Jalen Royals as a fourth round pick, you know? And so I wouldn't be shocked if exactly that's the scenario you're describing, but you would like to have some type of transitional period where it's like, we have Travis Kelce and can be effective in what we used to do, but also we're moving forward with and being effective now with wide receivers and what we can do in that facet of our game. So it's the Kansas City Chiefs. They're probably going to be fine just because they've been in, what, 7 straight AFC championship games and 3 straight Super Bowls and won 2 of them. But I would like to see something different because all of that can go away just like that.
Let me ask you one more here, Felix. Give me your favorite draft. Like, what team do you think did the best?
Oh, man, that's a good one. It's hard for me to not go away from let's say everything works out for every team. The team that's the happiest is the New York Giants because they got their edge rusher and they were a top 3 defensive end team in all of football last year, which is kind of shocking that they drafted Abdul Carter, to me at least. But they were, he was slotted to go there and best player available, makes all the sense in the world. But also they trade up and get Jackson Dart. If he works out, you have your 5th-year option quarterback, your franchise quarterback, and in New York, it's New York, so we'll never hear the end of it. So I think the Giants, let's say everything works out, they're probably having the best draft. But to me, I'm such a sucker for Caleb Williams because I like him. Colson Loveland going number 10 to the Bears. I'm interested to see how that works out with Ben Johnson and what he did with Laporta in Detroit. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the Bears collectively, if you collect the whole offseason. But that, you know what's funny? That same thing you just said about the Giants? Well, you can say the exact same thing about the Browns. They got their defensive lineman early. They didn't have to take quarterback, and they didn't have to trade back up to get their quarterback. They
got another hour for the whole Shadur conversation. Do you got it?
Yeah, I do think, like, in your scenario of if everything works out for teams, the Browns will win the draft because they found a quarterback in the 5th round.
Sure. For sure. If Shadur Sanders is what Shadur Sanders believes he is, then the Browns win. But assuming he's a 2-3 round draft prospect in a bad quarterback year, he's probably going to be on 4 or 5 different teams before his rookie contract is over.
I agree. And it's funny, too. I think the Browns did a nice job with that trade. I think the Jags did, too. Pretty hard to blame the Jags for going to get 2 players at the top of the draft.
Yeah,
which is essentially what they did.
It's just kind of hard to trade up and get Travis Hunter, who probably wasn't the best corner in this draft, and he was the best corner in this draft and definitely wasn't the best receiver. So why do you draft him at number 2 is my question.
Because he's 2 players. Even if he's a good receiver and a great corner, you got 2 players with 1 pick.
You got your 5th or 6th receiver that you could have gotten with an undrafted free agency contract.
Oh, you're not getting, you think he's a 5th or 6th receiver? Oh, in this draft class?
No. For his team. Like, I mean, like maybe for the Jags, because it's going to be fun.
You think Travis Hunter is going to be the 5th receiver on the Jags depth chart?
Because he's going to be their number 1 corner. Yeah.
Oh, no. He's playing both ways.
There's no way.
He's playing both ways. Well, let Mark, what is it? Max, April 29th, 2025 at 8:34 here. Travis Hunter's playing both ways.
He'll get some snaps like Deion did.
No. He's playing.
They're not going to put him out for 150 snaps a game. That's a recipe for disaster.
Because the football field gets longer in the NFL, and he's only done that his entire life.
Yeah, but the Jags are going to be investing a significant amount of money into him, and every snap you're out there increases the risk of getting injured.
You double
the opportunity for him to get injured.
You want to know why they made the trade, Jacob? They're the Jags, and they're stupid.
Felix messaged me, said it wasn't the Colorado player I expected to get fired up about. Now this is all I want to talk about. So you don't think the Jags move up the way they moved up, trade all the capital they trade? You think they did that so he can play wide receiver?
No, not at all. I didn't say that. I think he's going to play cornerback. He's going to be one of their starting cornerbacks. He's going
to
be...
Okay, so it not play receiver, though? Like, to only play one way?
I think that he will get snaps at both positions, but I don't think they're going to start him, and I don't think he's going to play significant snaps at both positions every single game this season. That's a recipe for disaster.
Do you think that's because of his ability to play both ways?
No. I think he's got the ability to do it.
Conditioning to do it doesn't change.
It's not about the conditioning, and it's not about the ability. It's about the protecting of the investment. Right. Like they traded a lot to get him. They're going to sign him to a big contract, like all of that. He's going to make a lot of money. And every time he's out on the field, he's going to, you know, like if he played every single snap on offense and defense, you've doubled the risk of significant injury for a guy that you're going to be paying a lot of money to.
But like what? You invested that much because you envision him playing both ways.
Yeah, but I think he can still contribute both. I'm not saying he's not going to play both ways. I'm just saying he's probably going to, in my opinion, I think he's going to probably be a pretty dynamic cornerback in the league. And then I think that they'll probably put him out there in different packages and things like that offensively, but he's not going to be their number one cornerback and their number one receiver. It won't be their number one receiver.
Because they have that already. Right. Brian Thomas was incredible last year.
He's probably not going to be their number two receiver either. He might be there. I don't know if I agree with Felix in saying he's going to be five or six, but I think he'll probably be like, they can probably put him out there in four receiver sets, maybe three receiver sets occasionally, but I don't think he's going to be consistently on the field on both sides of the ball. I think that's unrealistic.
So I would imagine here's what I would think of him as, and let me pull up their depth chart just to make sure I'm not, I think he'll start the year as like their third receiver. They don't even have anybody listed right now, really, else besides Thomas, I don't think. I think he'll start the year as the third, and then he'll be the second wide receiver by the end of this year. I didn't realize that I was in a minority here, and maybe I'm in the minority across the board. I don't know. But like Dyami Brown is their number two guy right now, who's meh, you know, he's fine. The other guys on the roster are all meh. Like way, way meh. So they look to me, when you trade all that capital, you could like they were at five. Like you, nobody in the world in the history of the NFL moves that kind of capital up to take a corner. It just doesn't like they don't make that move unless they envision him being a significant piece of both their offense and their defense. That's what I think.
I mean, Dyami Brown had a good year for the Jags last year. They also have Gabe Davis and they've got Parker Washington. Those are the main other receivers that they've got.
Travis Hunter's better than all of those guys except Brian Thomas.
Okay.
I mean, he is.
I don't know who you're arguing with here, because I'm not disagreeing with you that the ability isn't there for Travis Hunter.
We're not arguing about that. We're arguing about their intent with the player. And I think their intent with the player, because they moved up and invested so much to get him, they envision that he's going to be Shohei Ohtani. We've just never seen
He's not going to be Shohei Ohtani. I mean, that's I do disagree with you on that.
You can't have football players not play football because you're afraid they're going to get hurt. Right. Like Isaiah Pacheco.
I'm not saying that they're afraid that he's going to get hurt. I'm saying they're protecting their investment. It's not like if they were afraid he was going to get hurt, they wouldn't put him on the field at all. in any position. That's, I'm not suggesting that at all. What I'm saying is that they're going to be strategic and they're going to be, I think, surgical in how they utilize him one way or the other. Like, and it may very well be that he's primarily offense and selectively defense. Like, I honestly, if it goes the other direction, I don't disagree with you. If you say, like, because you mentioned this before, hey, like, he could be a primary receiver and then a nickel cornerback. Okay, cool. Like, I think that that's protecting your investment. You're not putting him out there every single snap defensively and every single snap offensively. If you find a package for him as a corner on third down or whatever it is in the nickel formation, great. Like, I think that that's the way that they're probably going to utilize him. He's not going to be an every down wide receiver and in every down cornerback. That is unrealistic. And that's not being afraid he's going to get hurt. That's being smart with your investment.
I don't think it is being. I think it's being too conservative with your investment.
To not
now,
be an every down wide receiver and an every down cornerback, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Because that's what he did. No, it's not ridiculous.
Yes, it
it's
is.
What he did in college.
You're
Why
right.
is it ridiculous?
But it's ridiculous because at Colorado, I mean, it's completely different than the NFL, and the amount of money he's getting paid by the Jags is completely different. It's not the same scenario at all.
If his ability is not good enough to do both,
it's not about his ability. It's not at all about his ability. It's about finding opportunities where he can contribute on both sides. I'm not in the camp that says he only needs to play on one side of the ball and not have him play on the other. That's not what I'm saying whatsoever. I'm saying have him be a primary guy on one side and be selective when you utilize him on the other side. That's not unreasonable whatsoever.
No, it's not unreasonable. It's not unreasonable. I disagree with it. I think here's all I'm saying. If he is one of your best corners, he will start at corner. If he is one of your best wide receivers, he'll also start at receiver. That's all I'm saying. And and again, it's going to take outside the box thinking. How long did it take before we got to Shohei that you let a great hitter who's a great pitcher also
stop pitch? Comparing him to Shohei? That's not the same situation whatsoever.
Why isn't it the same situation?
Because Shohei Ohtani bats in the lineup every day and pitches every fifth day. He's not pitching every day and batting every day. It's a completely different, it's apples and oranges. You can't compare it to that. You're playing every single snap in every single game, going back and forth on every side of the ball. And it's not just about when you're playing. It's about practicing and preparing as well. It's not about the ability whatsoever, but you don't think that one of the position coaches on either side isn't going to say, man, I really would like Travis Hunter to be more involved in our preparation and in our practices, but he's got to be over on the wide receiver room, or he's got to be over with the secondary. Like, there's not enough time in the day, there's not enough time in the week for him to realistically be able to prepare at an NFL caliber to play every single snap on both sides of the ball. You can't compare him to Shohei, because when Shohei was playing both ways, I know he's not doing it now because of his injury, but when he was playing both ways, he was in the lineup every single day and he was pitching every fifth day. It's not the same thing.
Right now, the Jags are saying he'll start with the onboarding process at wide receiver. Gladstone, the new GM there, says his intent is playing both sides of the ball, as is ours.
Great.
So we'll see. Look, we'll see how it works. It's going to be different than anything we've ever seen before. There's no question about that. It's unique. Their GM has called it. You got to understand who he is. They don't know yet, but I think it's fine. Like, it's not that big a deal. Like, we all have thoughts on what he's going to do. Different teams had different thoughts on what he was going to do. Clearly, if you remember the pre-draft process,
yeah.
When I see a team trade as much as they traded to move up, it's only been done one other time, I think, that a team has traded a first to move up in the first that is not a quarterback. It's been done one other time.
The guy's got all the ability in the world, and he's extremely talented. We've known this for a long time. I'm not knocking his ability or his caliber of play or anything like that at all. You can't compare him to Shohei Ohtani. That's not the same thing at all.
I mean, they obviously play different sports. What I mean about the comparison with Shohei is Shohei did something that baseball people said for decades and decades and decades you shouldn't do, which is let the guy do both things. And they did it, and it's worked out well. That's what I'm comparing it to. People have said you can't do it both ways for decades and decades and decades. We haven't had a lot of guys who appear to have the ability to do both. Travis Hunter is one of those guys. Even Prime, who's probably the best comparison, he wasn't a good receiver. He was just really, really fast. Travis Hunter is actually very good at both things. And so it is unique. And until we see it play out, and I think they want to give him the opportunity to, or you don't need to trade up that much and trade that much away to go get a corner. You just don't need like that at that point. To me, that's a reach in the draft. And I don't think that that's what their intent was. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, the first things first with Travis Hunter, is he good enough to be an NFL wide receiver? And is he good enough to be an NFL corner? We got to answer that question before anything else. Maybe he's not good enough to do one or the other or both. But if he is good enough to do both at a high level, I think in his career, he's going to be the, and this is where I compare it to Shohei, the guy who sort of changes the way we think about it. Well, this guy can do both. Let him do both, right? That's the comp I make with Shohei. He can pitch and hit. Let him do both. Until we had Shohei, that was a foreign concept. Since like Babe Ruth, like that didn't happen. And so it takes a unique and a dynamic talent to be able to do that. Travis Hunter appears to be able to, but he still has to prove it at both positions. He may not be good enough to do one or the other. I mean, they're going to take their time because they got to figure that out. What if he's not good enough to be an NFL wide receiver? What if he's not good enough to be an NFL corner? At that point, yeah, he's not going to play both ways very often. He may still come in packages. My thing is, if he is, then I think he'll play both ways significantly. Both ways before his career is done. I think it'll happen this year before the end of the year. I don't think it'll happen right out of the gates, but that's where I see that as far as like risk they were willing to take.
It also wouldn't surprise me if he went kind of as a Swiss Army knife, you know, type guy, if he's utilized in that way. Like where the need is, that's where right. They put him. It doesn't mean that he's consistently playing every single snap on both sides of the ball in every game. But if there's a game where they need him more at cornerback, or the game they need a more wide receiver, he goes where he's needed. And that may not be a game by game. That may be more of a season by season. Like, hey, man, based on our depth chart, we're going to need you to play more snaps at cornerback. Like that could be more realistic than because what I disagree with and what I don't think is going to happen is I don't think they're going to trot him out to be your top guy at cornerback and your top guy at wide receiver. And he's going to play every single snap in every single game. I don't think that's realistic.
I don't think he will out of the gates. But I think if he gets on the field and proves he can do that, then they'll let him try.
They'll let him try. I think that it's a situation because remember, this is something that happens in sports all the time where you have to have coaches and you have to have medical personnel on the team. You have to have front office people protect the player from himself. That happens all the time. And so when you look at Travis Hunter, he's not unlike a bunch of other athletes all of the time when they're like, I want to be on the field all the time. Do not take me off. Do not take me out of a game. I want to be there every single snap, every single game. It's probably going to be a situation where the organization may have to protect him from himself. And I think that's completely okay. He's a 22-year-old kid. Like, that's what he wants to do. He has the ability to do it. I'm not knocking that whatsoever. But I think the organization has a responsibility with the amount of money that they're paying him to protect their investment and protect the player.
I get it. Like if he's Ja'Marr Chase as a wide receiver, you want him to be Ja'Marr Chase as a wide receiver. If he's Darrell Revis as a corner, you want him to be Darrell Revis as a corner. I get it. But what if he's both? And again, that's too much of an expectation to put on him. But that's what we had with Shohei. Man, that was a fun show. I certainly did not expect today to spend any time on Travis Hunter, quite frankly. And we got a full segment. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but that's going to be a fun one to watch, and we will do it over the course of the preseason and the offseason, and we'll probably dissect it a little too much, honestly, until the start of the season. But otherwise, good stuff. Royals tonight, Royals baseball. You get them, no Shockers baseball. That game has been canceled. You got Royals Rays right here on KFH. Tommy, can we get some offense, please?
Yeah.
Too much to ask?
I mean, hey, I'm looking forward to the bats coming alive and talking about it tomorrow.
I watch two teams every night that can't score any runs, and I'm sick of it. Let's get some runs. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it. We've got Shreyas Lotta in tomorrow as well, our KU insider. More Sports Daily coming your way later in the week. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And together, we host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.